Welcome to a special edition of the TSN MMA Show. I'm joined in Los Angeles, California, by Danny Austin of the Calgary Sun.
What's up? Thank you for having me here.
And Jim Edwards of MMAKnit.com.
Aaron, thanks for having me. Good to always speak to you, man.
So today the UFC announced a pretty interesting press conference. It's the one that they do every single quarter. But the difference here is that Conor McGregor may be there. Khabib Nurmagomedov, of course, would be there if Conor's going to be there. And who knows how many main events could be laid out by the end of the year. We could find out what the main event in Toronto is. Of course, if you're listening to this on TSN Radio in Toronto and Ottawa, you probably already know what has happened, and hopefully you enjoyed it. Hopefully Conor McGregor was there, and we can get a taste of the notorious one before he returns to the octagon. But we're here for UFC 227 in LA. Not the most spectacular card. Unfortunately, Alexander Gustafsson and Volkan Oezdemir fell apart just a couple weeks ago, and that was probably really the fight that I think would have drawn the extra people in on top of those who are going to pay for every pay-per-view. Because the two main events, good rematches. Henry Cejudo has earned his spot at a rematch against Demetrius Johnson. And, of course, you've got TJ Dillashaw and Cody Garbrandt. A fight, really, that I don't think any of us can say that we know how that one's going to play out. Do you guys have a feeling on how this one does play out? Do you think that TJ Dillashaw will be able to get it done again against Cody Garbrandt?
I mean, like, if you're asking me, like, straight up for a pick with no caveats, I'd probably take TJ again. But, like, no, I don't think anyone has any idea. I mean, Cody came within probably seconds of finishing that fight back in November when they first fought. TJ was very much saved by the bell. I think these are the two best bantamweights in the world, probably, although I think Marlon Moraes probably has something to say about that. And I think that they are even...
What about Dominic Cruz?
Let's
not forget him.
True, but he hasn't fought in a while. So he's, you know, out of sight, out of mind a little bit. But either way, I mean, like, I thought that it was probably one of the fights of the year on paper going into last year. I do think the same thing this time, although because they just recently fought, there's a little bit less excitement about it for me.
Yeah, I mean, we know that Cody and TJ have also both just had children as well, so there's been those kind of distractions in their life as well, which is probably why we've not had the, I guess, intensity in the build-up of the first fight. Like Danny said, there's so little time, in between this and the first fight, it kind of asked the question, what has Cody been able to put right in that kind of meantime? So, like, if you're going to put a gun to my head, I'm going to pick TJ all day long because I've seen him win this fight already. But again, like we did see in the first fight, they're almost kind of mirror images of each other. They have that weird kind of sparring partner kind of exchanges where they're faint about 20 times before they throw a strike because it's almost like they're reading each other's like 10 steps ahead. They know each other, but I just feel that, and I did feel this going into the first fight, TJ has more weapons than Cody. Cody's, you know, an extremely talented fighter, but again, I see it being, and I see it kind of playing out a similar way on Saturday night. I've got TJ winning this.
I've got an interesting thought on this one too, which is, you mentioned that TJ has more weapons, but I think that Cody has the better weapon. And the thing that people, I think, are forgetting about Cody Garbrandt is, before that Dillashaw fight, he was cleaning people's clocks in the first round. I mean, not Cruz, he went the distance with Cruz, but this is a guy with legit power, the best power, in my opinion, at bantamweight, and that power can go at any time. We've seen TJ's chin get tested, and of course, we've seen Cody's chin get tested now, Cody's first loss in the UFC against TJ Dillashaw, but I think that when you look at these two guys, we do need to remember that that last fight could be a completely different story, because Cody Garbrandt does have the ability to finish anybody at any time. And I think that, you know, we could see a first-round finish by Cody Garbrandt. We could see a five-round decision victory for TJ Dillashaw. That's the thing about this fight that I love, is there are countless scenarios in terms of how this plays out. I don't know if it's going to go exactly like the last fight. In fact, it could go the complete opposite and go the distance. We saw Cruz and Garbrandt go the distance. We saw Dillashaw and Cruz go the distance. These are guys that have good endurance, that can go five straight rounds. But again, I think we need to remember the primary weapon of Cody Garbrandt and how effective that just is.
Yeah, I mean, their ceilings are so high, right? So by me picking TJ, it pretty much entirely comes down to I saw them fight 7-8 months ago. I mean, it is literally...
Right.
And I added the caveat even that, you know, Cody did, like, knock him down and look pretty close to the end of the finish before the battle in the first round. So, like, oh, I'm not saying that I'm confident in my pick whatsoever. I do love this fight. I just, for me... I don't always, like, Cody hadn't even defended the belt. I don't love him getting an immediate rematch here, so I'm a little bit biased just against the fight in general. But, you know, maybe I should just get over myself.
Well, I think the fight does have a lot less juice than it did last time around. I mean, I thought that last fight was about as good as it's going to get promotionally for this thing. It had gotten to the point by fight night, you were almost exhausted by how much beef there was for this particular fight, and now they're not really willing to... to go back to that well. It's more about this is a rematch of two guys that are probably the best two fighters in the bantamweight division. There's a little bit more merit to it. It's not just a forced kind of narrative, although there was legitimate animosity between Team Alpha Male and Dwayne Ludwig as well as TJ Dillashaw. But it's interesting now with Team Alpha Male. I think one of the interesting things about this is that they've let Justin Buckles go. And Justin Buckles cornered TJ several times before this particular fight with Garbrandt, where he was in Garbrandt's corner. Could Justin Buckles be kind of on the outside talking to TJ? Because I think they are still friendly about what Garbrandt's weaknesses could potentially be that he hasn't seen. I mean, I think we might be digging a little bit deep. A fight's a fight. These guys get in there. It's all instinct. But you just never know how much information TJ might have this time around. And I think that's going to play to his advantage if that is the case.
I think a fight's a fight, but the margins are so slim that if something like that were to be happening, yeah, it could be an advantage. And that's really all I'd say. But like, look, if Dillashaw has inside information, that's going to help in a fight where you're talking about two elite fighters who have, I mean, like, they just don't have any weaknesses. That's what's interesting about them.
I mean, I know Justin very well, so I'm like 99% sure that's not going to happen. Like, he's a stand-up guy. He's not kind of about that life in terms of going behind people's backs. And, like, I think he's
What's he doing now?
He's in Alaska. He's at home, right?
He's
teaching and still training some fighters back home, but he's focused on triathlons right now.
Oh, really?
He's taken himself out of the fight game. He had one fight back in Alaska fighting championships a few months ago, and he lost it by decision, and now he's just focused on triathlon. I don't think he's just not about this anymore, not at this point of time anyway, so I just very much doubt it. I think it's a good point, though. Like, I'm not saying it's relevant. I just don't think it's going to happen, and I think just lastly for me on this fight, I think, you know, I just think it's such a big thing when you look at how settled TJ is with Dwayne Ludwig. He knows him inside out, whereas Cody, like at Team Alpha Male, there's always seems to be moving pieces of the puzzle, right? And I just think that, again, like I said earlier, I've seen this fight before. I've seen TJ win it. Would I be surprised if Cody does? Not at all. I'm going with TJ.
Well, TJ is really Dwayne Ludwig's disciple. I mean, if you look at the people that Dwayne Ludwig trains, TJ really is that guy. I mean, I know that he's involved with that camp with Juan Archuleta and Pub Swanson, but I don't think that Ludwig is really their primary trainer. With TJ, he is. And then you look at the co-main event, you've got Matt Hume with Demetrius Johnson, just two guys where it's just kismet. Like, these guys know each other inside and out. And Demetrius, really, you know, you look back at his fights, and it's hard for me to find a way where Cejudo wins this fight outside of catching him or maybe being able to out-grapple him for some time. I just think that Cejudo is still very early in the game in terms of MMA. We got to remember, he's only been in this game for 4 or 5 years, whereas Demetrius has such a wealth of experience. And we saw the way that he just utterly dominated Ray Borg. And it's tough for me to wrap my head around how Cejudo can win this fight. Do you guys agree?
I do. I mean, I don't. I think Cejudo is a much higher caliber of MMA athlete than a Ray Borg.
In your opinion, who has the best chance of beating Demetrius Johnson in that division? I mean, take Dillashaw out of the equation.
Right, like, Benavidez is coming off a loss, so it's hard to pick him, but a Benavidez of 18 months ago, I thought, did have a shot. I still think he would have. I wouldn't pick anyone over Demetrius Johnson. I want to be clear. But I do think Benavidez, I mean, he got caught in their second fight and was never going to get a third one, but I always thought that Joe was just so well-rounded and was always improving. I don't think it's impossible for Cejudo to win. I don't see a path to victory, really, either, beyond taking him down and just holding him there and hoping to get some shots in, but you can't do that to Demetrius Johnson. So I think Cejudo is probably just going to go for the takedowns. I mean, that's the only reason he's in this fight.
He did take him down once in that first fight.
Yeah, and you just hold him there. But, I mean, if it's grappling, I mean, when you try to grapple with him, that's when DJ hit him with a dirty knee. Not dirty,
yeah.
Like illegal, just really awesome knee.
And that's the crazy part. Like, I think Cejudo probably has the best chance of anybody to beat him, but I don't think it's a very good chance. I mean, we're talking about a gold medal level wrestler. I mean, and unfortunately with flyweight, I mean, grappling isn't quite the X factor as it is in other divisions because they're just not as top heavy and they're a lot more slippery in the smaller weight class. They're just a lot faster, more agile. And I think Demetrius being held down for 5 rounds is not really realistic.
Can I amend my answer?
Sure.
I'm going to go Horiguchi. I know that
I said in the UFC, though.
I know, you said in the UFC,
yeah.
But I mean,
Horiguchi
he was in the
now
UFC. He was pushed into that fight. He wasn't quite ready when they fought the first time in Montreal.
But Horiguchi also is in the flyweight at this point. All of his most recent fights have been at bantamweight. So
okay.
He can make flyweight, though, still.
Yeah, yeah.
And he still wants that fight.
We're getting creative here, but I see what you're saying.
Yeah, I mean, like, let's face it. Like, Henry Cejudo, if he wins on Saturday, it will probably be one of the greatest upsets of all time. Like I was saying earlier, we've already seen this fight.
Yeah, the odds don't really indicate that. I mean, like...
They're crazy odds. Like, whoever's making these odds is just...
Yeah, because I think Demetrius is like a 4-1 favorite.
That's crazy. He should just be astronomically... Like, we saw the first fight. Henry got him down. That was his whole game plan. And it just fizzled.
Yeah.
Like, I won't go into the full details, but myself and another colleague, we saw him after the fight. Henry was not in a good place, obviously. He just lost his first world title fight in the UFC.
And his first fight, period.
Along the line of he just didn't know what to do now.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you're pretty much a broken man. Of course, you are going to be after losing a world title fight, but, like, that doesn't leave you. That feeling of, like, helplessness won't have left him.
Yeah.
And he'll get announced Saturday, and, like, I just cannot see any other result.
Yeah.
Demetrius Johnson.
But just to amend that, actually, I think Cejudo lost to Benavidez. That fight was so close, I always forget who won that
decision. Benavidez won, but
it was after the title fight.
Yeah. I thought Benavidez won that fight, but I know a lot of people thought...
I'm of the Cejudo opinion, but I can't go... Like, either way, that was one of those fights where you can't really definitively say either guy won.
Which, I mean, speaks to the fact that the number one and number two guy... in the division for the last, couple of years?
Yeah.
Like, literally, both got crushed by DJ. I mean,
In the
first round, it speaks to how far ahead he is from everyone else.
So, I mean, let's talk about the elephant in the room, then. Like, we're saying DJ is going to absolutely smash everyone, and he is, like, he's the guy that said no to fighting TJ Dillashaw.
And not according to him at the conference call.
Who knows?
I mean, they're fighting on the same card.
Exactly.
If they wanted to make that fight... They're fighting on the same card. They could have made that fight.
What he said
if
on
the fighters
control,
were amenable to
he
it.
Said on the conference call yesterday that he had said yes to the fight, but then he got hurt and needed surgery, and they didn't offer it to him again. So just for people listening, you haven't.
Yeah, but like
that,
if he's of that mindset of like wanting to prove he's the best fighter in the world, you don't just go and accept like a rematch with Henry Cejudo. Don't ask, don't get. And if you want to prove you're the best in the world, you fight high weight classes. You go beyond your boundaries. But he's
and
not.
And Dillashaw's wanted to come to him
exactly. So he's not. He's not even, like, pushing himself. This is why this really frustrates me. Everyone badgers on about how DJ's not pushed, DJ's not promoted enough. He is promoted enough.
About anybody being pushed is the dumbest argument ever.
Push
Amanda
yourself.
Nunes was on a card with Ronda Rousey and on UFC 200, not just on the card, headlining two of the biggest pay-per-view cards ever. And people complain about the UFC not pushing Amanda Nunes. She was in front of 2.7 collective million eyeballs. If you add up the two, it's probably a lot of overlap, but I digress. They can't do a better job of promoting somebody than putting them in front of audiences of over a million people. They just can't. So this, they're not promoting him well enough. How can they promote him? Can anybody give me an answer of how they can do a better job of promoting Demetrius Johnson and getting more people to buy the paper?
I mean, I think for a very long time, Demetrius Johnson was headlining cards in Canada alone.
And people were leaving the arena.
Okay, fine, but I'm just saying, like, at both in the Vancouver card, I believe 174, the Montreal card, DJ was being left on his own. He had a legitimate complaint. He's also fought now on the John Jones card.
If you look at every superstar, though, in the UFC's history, and you just go back, the UFC hasn't promoted any of them above or beyond the other. They have promoted themselves. Their skill sets have built them into... Ronda Rousey beating people within seconds of every fight promotes Ronda Rousey, not the UFC's machine... I mean, certainly they do the promos and it helps, but it's not going to put butts in the seat. It's an intangible thing. Conor McGregor promoted Conor McGregor, not the UFC. They put him in a position to succeed, for sure.
Yeah.
But they're also putting DJ in. Like, what more can they do for DJ? What more can they do? Can they put him on billboards?
DJ Dillashaw, and he didn't take it.
I can make, like, minor counter-arguments, but that don't actually disprove your point, so I'm not going to. I hear what you're saying. I mean...
Tell me how you're going to get an extra 100,000 buys for Demetrius Johnson.
Just
100,000.
I mean, I am genuinely of the belief that it would be great if he wanted to go up weight classes and do all that. I also think that DJ's in a little bit of like a Michael Jordan situation, or where he beat everyone in his era, and now we almost discount how good those people were.
People don't do that with Jordan. That was the best era of basketball ever. Yeah, Hakeem Olajuwon, Larry Bird, Magic Johnson,
right now
Isaiah
the best
Thomas.
Era of basketball ever. but you just look at the
right now is the best era.
Right now is the best era ever. I just think that like it's like all these guys didn't win championships, so they're not all time greats. Is sort of how it's perceived in certain circles. So, you know, like the Malones, those guys. And it almost takes away from their legacy. Where, like, DJ's just dominated everyone. I think he's done everything he could do. Other than not wanting to go up to 135, where he is not as good.
Yeah,
he is a better fighter at 125. He is completely about maximizing his potential.
But nobody's asking him to go to 135, have they? I mean...
Yes, people did.
Yeah, but right now the everybody wants TJ to fight him at 125.
What's he
going
to lose, though? What does he have to lose if he fights 135 pounds?
Right now, once he broke the title defense record,
yeah,
I agree with you. Prior to that, when his argument was he didn't want to get stuck fighting a fight that was possibly going to prevent him from breaking the all-time record, I understood that.
Well, I'll say this. If I'm the loser...
I don't think he turned this fight down.
If I'm Cody Garbrandt and I lose this fight to Dillashaw, I'm moving down to 125 and I'm fighting whoever they put in front of me. Then you can get the shot... with Demetrius, where Demetrius can't say, well, the guy hasn't proven that he can make weight, he hasn't proven this. Well, I mean, he's young. How old is Cody Garbrandt? 25? 26?
I mean,
you know.
What would have probably helped all of these divisions and these fighters more, you and I were talking earlier, the fact that flyweight, bantamweight, featherweight have not, the belts haven't been defended once this year, you know, they've been out of sight, out of mind for a fair bit of time right now. So, I think the fact that there's no heat on these fights, or the perceived to be no heat on his right. It just has to do with the fact that he just hasn't fought in a long time.
He has been, though.
No, but,
I mean,
you know,
he just fought on free TV and done okay numbers, but that's really about as far as it goes. He hasn't.
I think bantamweight was building heat when you went from Dominic Cruz beating TJ Dillashaw, Garbrandt beating Cruz.
It was
and
almost
Dillashaw
like we had the triangle we wanted, then it just never happened.
Yeah, and Cruz versus Garbrandt was on a Rousey pay-per-view, so it's hard to know how big it would have been, but it got eyeballs. I mean,
yeah.
People watched that.
It was
and, of
going.
Course, TJ versus Garbrandt was on the Madison Square Garden card, so people have been watching this division, and it has gone slow. You're right. Injuries have gotten in the way, and a lot of other things.
Yeah, and I mean, the fact is, look, it's still, for whatever, for all the concerns about how this card is not really generating much interest, we have the two lightest male weight divisions headlining the friggin' Staples Center in downtown Los Angeles. So one of the biggest cities in the world they're headlining. So if you want to give them a pop, I mean, this is the chance to do it.
Yeah, absolutely. Although I don't think people watch pay-per-views based on the locale. I think
it's a big event. Like, I think Danny's point is this is supposed to be, like last year in Anaheim, we had Jon Jones versus Daniel Cormier too. And what was it? I can't remember the other fights on
Woodley
there.
And Maya.
Yeah, Woodley and Maya. Those big fights though. Like, we scoff now, but they were good fights.
Yeah, oh yeah.
So like that was a big.
But that was the biggest selling card of the year, other than the GSP card.
I mean,
that was a big card for sure.
Yeah, for sure. And
I just think
we're selling this one down the river a bit. Look what you guys got in Calgary last week.
I think it was a better card than this one.
Yeah, 100%.
It's a great card.
It was a huge card, yet we've kind of sacrificed this one. And there are other reasons to get interested about being here in Los Angeles this week, which we'll come on to.
Yeah,
this, like I was saying to Danny, like Los Angeles is one of the best cities in the world. I'm glad to be here. But if this was, I won't say I don't offend anyone, if this was a smaller city in the back end of nowhere, I would feel very disappointed to be here for this fight.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's fair to say. But let's go to that press conference on Friday and just I'm trying to figure out what's going to headline what, because when you go weight class by weight class, and I talked about this on last week's show, it's kind of slim pickings. I mean, in terms of what could headline in Toronto, what could headline MSG even. I think if we've got Cyborg and Nunes at the end of your card, and you've got Conor versus Khabib, you know, by all accounts, likely going to be in October. What are you headlining in MSG, and what are you headlining in Toronto?
There
are not that many weight classes.
I have a clear answer for Toronto. I think that it's going to be George St. Pierre against Anderson Silva. I don't think there needs to be a belt on the line.
But have you heard that? Like, I know Front Row Brian tweeted that out, but are there links to
it? I know that I was at Robin Black's show in Calgary last week.
I was with you.
Faraz Ahami, George's coach, said that he wanted that fight. And
well, he said, Faraz wanted that fight.
Faraz wanted that fight.
If George could fight, the question was, if George could fight, have one more fight in his career, who would you want to be?
But George was saying on Rogan's podcast a while ago that he wanted, like...
And the UFC.
Or Floyd Mayweather. I mean, like, him saying Anderson was a very specific, like, turn. And, look, all I'm saying is where there's smoke, there's fire. And if people are going to get mad at it because it's 5 years too late, I don't care. I've been wanting to see that fight for 10 years. And if that's the headliner for Toronto,
sure.
I'm thrilled. Do I have any other evidence? No. But you just, as you said, you look at it, who can headline
Max Holloway versus Ortega, I think, could be an option. I know they want to take it easy with Max Holloway, but Max seems to think that he's okay, and Max loves Toronto. Jose Aldo says he wants to fight in Toronto. So maybe an Aldo versus Ortega interim fight? If,
that's a good alternative.
You know,
I'm really unsure about Max right now.
It's not a good headliner.
You can't go from
Aldo, the last headliner was an interim featherweight.
Yeah, you can't go from Aldo being the co-main event of a Fox card in Calgary to headlining a Toronto card.
Yeah.
I live in Calgary.
Yeah,
I'm not suggesting
that's necessarily
the
headliner, but...
But you
there's
need
just
the
not
headliner.
A lot of options.
You need the headliner.
Well, okay, but let's say this. Let's say, hypothetically, like you said, you've got St. Pierre versus Silva in Toronto. That card can't be bigger than MSG. So what are you putting in MSG?
I think Cormier.
Versus?
Corey Anderson.
Versus Gustafson?
Maybe.
But I'm not convinced that Cormier wins that fight. And I'm not convinced that Cormier wants to cut the weight again.
No, but I mean, he's the only option.
He
is the only option.
Now you're taking a card that's supposed to be your biggest card of the year, and it's worse than Cormier versus Stipe, and then it's coming off
there
of that October card,
fights,
which would be Khabib versus Conor. So I don't
so
know. The MSG card for me is the big question mark right now.
Is there any way? I think we all assume that because there's been chatter about it that Cyborg and Amanda Nunes is the end of
December.
Yeah,
I
think that's good enough for Madison Square Garden. I don't know.
Yeah, Madison Square Garden.
I know. I'm just saying that you could have done that in November.
So, but what is it going to be? Like that to me is the big question because they're going to have to be creative if they want to do something that's going to sell MSG.
So here is a crazy out the park. Go look at Nick Diaz's Instagram right now.
Well,
this
not to mention that
the
grand jury said that they were not going to indict him as well.
Really?
Yeah. But they are still pressing charges. Like the Nevada courts are still looking to proceed with charges in some regard. But if that goes away, then you never know. But I don't think the UFC wants to be in the
not until that the legal stuff is cleared up for sure. And they may not even want to be involved.
That gets cleared up. You watch. You look at him, man.
That's
he looks in like the best shape I've seen him in years.
But there's also Nate Diaz. And Nate Diaz is another wild card because you've got maybe Alvarez or I don't know if Poirier would take that fight but because he wants the title fight, but you never know. I mean, I don't think Nate Diaz is the toughest opponent for guys at lightweight and you can build your name off of him.
Is he big enough for Madison Square Garden, though, with nothing on the line?
Against who?
I don't know. Yeah, it just depends on what it is. I mean, they were banding about that Nate Diaz and GSP idea, but
like,
GSP seems completely disinterested in it.
Like, let's not...
Yeah.
And also, let's add here, let's not pretend like there is a master plan that we're trying to figure out right now. Like, UFC...
And we might find out on Friday.
No. I don't think there is a plan. You ask around, and like, this is... They've been behind the game for a long time.
Look at Darren Till versus Woodley.
Yeah,
you know, they needed something.
They pulled something out of fire. This is like, they're literally living day by day right now. And that's a fact. And I think that's widely known.
Except that they have a press conference where they're announcing a bunch of stuff on Friday. So.
Yeah, but
a lot of it's already
go weight class by weight class.
Yeah.
I mean, unless Dana White says, you know, I want DJ to fight TJ after this card and we're going to do it on this date, maybe they can do that. But if you go... Like, weight class by weight class. It's slim pickings right now.
Yeah, there's no one.
There's Rose. Rose is up in the air. Don't know what's happening with her, but I don't know if she headlines a pay-per-view. I don't know if there's enough juice there.
Not in New York.
She's going to face either Carolina or Jessica, right?
Yeah, but that fight's booked already, Jessica and Carolina.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
So that division's kind of on hold. And then you look at all the men's divisions, and they're pretty much tied up, aside from light heavyweight.
Yeah, well, there you go.
Whitaker's not going to fight. This year, they could do an interim middleweight, but
they fight in September, so that you can't turn that around quickly enough.
Yeah,
and you certainly can't announce that.
I mean, MSG's got some great fights on it already. It's like the middleweight extravaganza. You've got Adesanya Brunson, you've got Rockhold Weidman, you've got Costa Romero. If Romero hasn't been signed a contract, which is still kind of up in the air, the graphics have been made, but that doesn't necessarily mean anything.
Yeah, the truth is, I mean,
and you've got Jacare on that card too. Who's Jacare fighting? Branch on that card.
Yeah.
So that's just some middleweight, almost like a middleweight tournament.
Yeah, I mean, it's good, but it needs a headline. Like every single card of the year needs a headline.
Yeah.
Doesn't have one, let's scratch it.
Yeah, I just go away. I mean, based on what you're saying, that makes a lot of sense because you go weight class by weight class, and I just can't identify anything other than light heavyweight that's even
and
rational or possible.
I think there are only three or four fighters who we really think conceivably can headline Madison Square Garden specifically, right? I mean,
you can
have a throwaway show in Vegas
at
any point of the year. And look, if it's not great, you still get a certain number of fans. It's still in Vegas. They've got a long-standing relationship. You can't, in New York, have a bust.
The
it's got to be
incredible.
Yeah, you've got to just, it's got to be a huge show.
Yeah, but what's nothing there?
So that's what kind of makes me think that maybe sorry, Toronto, but they pull George versus Anderson on there.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
that could happen.
So, Jim, while I have you here, I want to talk about Darren Till getting this title shot against Tyron Woodley. Obviously, Colby Covington was the next guy in line. He had the interim title. But you know Darren pretty well. Did he give you a sense of how this came together?
Yeah, I mean, obviously the UFC went to Colby. They needed a headliner for UFC 228, and Colby was having surgery, sinus surgery, so wouldn't have been ready in time. So they went to the next ranked guy, and it was Darren. So obviously if you're Darren Till and you're, 25 years old, you're not going to be turning down a UFC world title fight. So, you know, like, I think he, obviously, Darren is someone that is, he doesn't post much on things like Twitter and that. But he sees all the feedback. And, you know, he's obviously a bit upset, I guess, with some of the feedback he's been getting, the reaction, because, like, as he says, like, if you're going to get offered a world title fight, you're going to take it. But I do feel for Colby Covington, though.
Yeah, and Colby Covington's out and about with the belt. He's meeting very important people, like Ronda Rousey at the WWE event. So we know that he's still out there with the belt and his nice suits. I'm just doing this to take a shot at Danny Austin.
No comment on Colby Covington.
So, but do you feel for him a little bit, losing this opportunity?
I'm sympathetic to him as a athlete. I think I'm not sympathetic to him as a human being or as a man in any way. I can't stand Colby Covington, and I think his whole shtick is offensive to me and to all people who love democracy.
People who love pro wrestling. Yeah. I think he's fantastic.
I can't stand Colby Covington. To be honest, I don't think that should have been an interim title shot that he got against Rafael Dos Anjos at UFC 225.
Hey, main events don't book themselves, buddy.
Yeah, that wasn't the main event. That was the co-main event. Yes, I feel bad for him, but only on one level. And on the other level, don't get sinus surgery when you're offered a title shot.
I don't know if that coincided, but maybe he could have canceled the sinus surgery. Who knows? I mean, title shots are important, but do you feel like the UFC is kind of sabotaging what could have been a really good promotional machine in terms of Colby Covington and Tyron Woodley?
I mean, there was that tweet about how after all of this work that Colby did, that the UFC did, booking the interim, they put up with all the criticism about making that an interim title fight. They finally had it. They finally had Tyron Woodley mad and against an opponent who people kind of cared about seeing him fight, and then they just aren't doing the fight. I get that criticism. At the same time, I mean, look, if you go back and listen, I was on, there were a couple of us who came on this very podcast to do a end of 2017 and then preview for 2018, and I think I had Darren Till picked as the champion by the end of the year. So,
you might have been the only one, yeah.
Well, I'm giving myself credit. Don't go back and check. I don't know if I did that or not. But I know he was
a little pal on the back. Yeah. We have no idea.
Yeah.
Sure or not.
I know he was in the discussion. So, I mean, I actually think that, you know, he's done a very good job promoting himself and making him a bit of a star without having to lower himself to the levels that Colby has. So, hey, I'm happy for him as a person and as an athlete. So it's sort of the complete opposite.
Darren, I know, is a friend of yours, and I think he matches up pretty favorably against Tyron. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, I mean, everyone says, so here's the thing, right? Everyone's saying that it's going to be a very similar fight to the one that we saw with Woodley and Thompson. If you're expecting that, expect the opposite. Darren, like everyone, before he stepped in the cage against Thompson, everyone was saying, oh, he's going to go in there and try and do him in one or two rounds, and even Darren was saying he was going to do that, when all the time in the background he knew the kind of strategy his coach Colin Heron had set. So it's never that simple. Don't expect that sort of fight. I do think he's got some big kind of advantages in the fact that size is being one of them. Like, people, like, if you've never met Tyron Woodley, he's actually really short.
Yeah.
He's really small. It's crazy. You actually go on UFC.com and you look at, like, the reach and, like, height statistics. Mm-hmm. Like, that. I swear they're inaccurate, because Darren's a big guy, Tyron's a small guy. And I think that could be... I mean, that plays a factor in several things. Is he going to be able to get the takedown? Probably, because he's a big guy. Like, he's a very strong guy and a very accomplished wrestler, Tyron. Is he going to be able to keep him there? Is a different thing altogether. And, like, as well...
And
just,
another thing is, Darren Till's jiu-jitsu's never really been tested, and he's apparently very good. Like, he apparently is, like, a very, very good grappler that we just have never seen before in terms of what he can do on the ground.
Yeah, I mean, like, there's a video, actually, on my YouTube channel of him submitting a black belt, and that wasn't just, like, a set-up thing, and that was a rolling session, which I saw. But again, as well, like, the wrestling department, us Brits always get absolutely canned over how bad our wrestling is, and it's been in the undoing of many a British mixed martial artist before. But Darren trains with a Commonwealth Games, like Gold Medalist, Mike Grundy, he doesn't fight in the UFC, but I mean, I can't remember his record right now. He's undefeated, like 10-0 or something. He's fighting in Pancras this weekend, but he's an incredibly good wrestler. So Darren like gets these training partners from all over the world, and I don't know, man. It's an interesting fight. Like you were saying earlier, I know Darren a lot, so I'm not going to go on the record and go for any pick because I've got an open bias, I think. I'd be very open about that. I think it's going to be a good fight. I think Tyron Woodley, I will say that Tyron Woodley's a champion for a reason. He's beaten some very, very, very good fighters before and made them look very, very average. So, yeah. Hard fight for anyone.
We've got Aaron. Tyron, I think, is 36 also.
Is he 36? Wow.
Yeah, he's an old guy like me.
Huh? Aaron's the host, so I don't know if I'm allowed to ask a question. How is his weight at this point? Is he managing it differently than Darren? Obviously missed weight last one, and it was quite a scary scene. Just curious.
Yeah, I mean, it was a scary scene. It was really, yeah. So the one thing that everyone, I guess, kind of didn't see in the difference between him on weigh-in day and the 24 hours later when he came for a re-weigh-in, he looked like a totally different person. And even though he was still cutting weight to make that weight again, he looked totally different. Speaking to him now, off, like, you know, not on a recording, but still, you know, just on the record, I guess, is like he's saying he's a lot lighter than he is now. His full camp, he's going to be coming over to LA for the press conference tomorrow, I believe. Press conference is on Friday. And then he's going to be heading straight to the UFC PI. So then he's going to be doing his full camp with his team out at the UFC PI.
Oh, wow. Cool.
Getting that weight down. He's like, I would bet a lot of money on him making 170 pounds. I know that's crazy to say because he's missed weight badly two out of the last four fights. There are circumstances which he isn't using very much as an excuse, but he certainly could do.
There are so few guys that have missed weight for title shots, though. I mean,
yeah, I mean,
you're talking, you can count them on one hand.
I'm not saying it's impossible. All I'm saying is,
yeah.
I know things that perhaps aren't out in the public that he could have like gone to the well and used them as excuses. He's just not that sort of guy. He's going to take it, and trust me, the amount of abuse that like, I can see it that he gets online about missing weight, like, you know, challenging Darren Till to make 170 pounds probably wasn't the best idea because he's going
to
do it.
Yeah, and the weird thing about Till is he gets compared to McGregor, but I think the difference between Till and McGregor in terms of how they promote themselves is Conor will take shots at you, whereas Till will build himself up. Till never takes shots at his opponent. He always just talks about how he's going to beat them. Yeah. he just has the supreme confidence in his ability and what he can do. And as an undefeated fighter, you can see why. He's very composed in there. He's just a fantastic martial artist and still very young. So, I mean, he's doing a lot of things right. And win or lose, I think he's got such a bright future in the sport. He's just such a charismatic and confident young man. I really relish seeing him come up this way and get to where he is now.
Yeah, one thing I'll just add is like you were saying there, it doesn't matter if he wins or loses. I do agree with you on that. I think if he wins, it'll like catapult him onto, you know, much bigger things. If he loses, I don't think it's a catastrophe. Like the thing with Darren is, and I find with like with you guys like over here, kind of in America and Canada especially, and even just outside of the UK, you guys haven't really been exposed to Scousers, right?
Yeah.
And the Scousers are like their own kind of different breed. So I'd imagine it's like...
Scousers are from Liverpool, right?
Yeah, right.
Okay.
Scousers are from Liverpool. And, you know, like, they're intriguing for you guys, right? You guys are super interested in the way he talks, the way he, like, goes about himself. And what I find is people are just fascinated with watching him go about his business, and I don't think that goes away if he loses. So interesting. I just think that win or lose, I still think he's going to be a big star. He's only 25 years old, so I guess we'll see on September 8th.
And it's interesting, like he talks about how after this fight he wants to fight Usman, or he'll fight Covington, or he'll fight at 185. He just like he doesn't care. Like he has just such the utmost of confidence in himself, and I just love seeing that. I think it's very refreshing, and not that other fighters don't. It's just the way that he kind of presents that. I think that he does it in a unique fashion.
It comes across naturally too, which is a part of it. It never feels like he's faking it. And as you said, it's just who he is. I like him, like just as a person, as a fighter.
He's a good person.
He
never talks about money.
Well.
That's a big thing. Never talks about money. You ask him about money, like I've asked him several times, all right, you're getting paid for this, right? One of the first questions was I said to him, like, you're taking this on 6 weeks. No, you're getting paid for this, right? He's like, whatever, mate. Like, money will come.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Money will come. And like that.
It should come now.
It should come now. I hope he's getting paid.
And just going back to the previous conversation about Colby, you were saying, why didn't he delay the sinus surgery? The reason he didn't delay it was because he thought the UFC were just going to go to him. Oh, okay, Tyron versus Colby at Madison Square Garden, a much more lucrative pay-per-view, and I guess much more lucrative payday for him.
The UFC is not dragging Colby in front of New York media. There's no way.
No, you never know.
You never know. And like that was suggested as the plan. But that was his whole thing. He wants a big payday. And that's the difference. You have Colby putting the money ahead of him, whereas Darren puts the fighting ahead of him. The money will come. It's an interesting comparison.
But before we wrap this up, I do want to go back to last weekend in Calgary. I thought that card was just really phenomenal. From top to bottom, it really delivered. And Dana White said he owed the city of Calgary, and I think the debt is paid. Would you agree?
100%. I live in Calgary. From Toronto, live in Calgary. I've been there for 8 years. It's my first hometown card, and I thought the city presented itself very well. I thought it was a two-way street. I thought the fans in the Saturdome were phenomenal, and they clearly were knowledgeable and cheered at the right times. I thought that the UFC gave a card that had very high-end star power for a Fox card. We're talking Jose Aldo here, you know?
Alvarez, big legends of the sport, really.
Exactly. And then they picked the two right Albertan fighters to finish off the prelims. So Hakeem Duwadu, who is a local Calgary kid who had a lot of pressure on his shoulders because he was coming off a really bad debut. And then Jordan Mean, who, he's as Albertan as Paul Brandt and canola oil. He really is. He's just a guy who I think anyone in the MMA scene in Alberta knows and loves. And, to finish it off with those two before kind of transitioning into the bigger names was perfect. And they both put on good shows. And it was, honestly, there were some emotional highs and lows, but it was a great night and a great week.
Bow down. There is only one strawweight queen.
Yeah. People are getting on her about that.
I love it. I absolutely love it.
I'm with you. I kind of have a bias now with Joanna because I think I loved what I did with her last week going to the Calgary Tower. I just thought it was a lot of fun. And, she said, I gave you my word, we're going to do it. And I just thought that showed a lot about her character, doing that on the day where she should be cutting weight, but was already on weight, She's committed to her craft right now. She's on weight the day before the weigh-ins. She said she woke up 0.2 over, went, took a bath, and got on the scale.
She's beaten everybody except for Rose, right?
Yeah.
Rose has beaten less people than she's beaten.
I'm seeing a lot on social media. It's like, oh, she didn't finish Tisha. It's like, nobody's finished Tisha.
Yeah.
Tisha is one of the toughest girls at strawweight. I mean, I do think that Andrade put more of a beating on her than Joanna did, but I just think Andrade is also that type of fighter.
Mm-hmm.
Like, Andrade is, Joanna's kind of death by 1,000 paper cuts, whereas Andrade is like, just, I'm going to blitz you. Like, she's like a little Vanderlei Silva. Like, she's just going to come after you.
And are we worried that Joanna, have we not watched all of her? Like, she puts beatings on people.
Yeah.
The fact that she didn't deal, she still easily won that fight. Yeah,
it was a blank sheet.
Yeah, that was a straightforward victory.
Yeah.
And
I think, controversially, I think it's a good chance she beats Rose if she fights for a third time. Like, Rose is an extremely sketchy fighter when it comes to the mental game. And, the last few... I've just been waiting for her. I don't know if it's going to happen the next fight, or the second fight, or the third fight. She has nights where she's just off. And she gets beaten. And it takes... And, she's a supremely talented athlete. She gets,
was she, though? I mean, or has she matured and grown?
Yeah, she's matured. She's a better fighter, but people always become better fighters. I just think that mentally, when the pressure, just sometimes gets to her, and we've seen it previously, who's to say this doesn't happen in the third fight with Joanna? It could happen against Carolina, it could happen against Jessica. I'm just saying it's, don't bet against Joanna if this happens the third time.
Here's the thing, I was one of the few that predicted that Rose was going to beat Joanna the first time around. I didn't think it was going to happen like that, but I you look at Rose's versatility, and she can do everything. But the thing about mixed martial arts that I love is that matchups make the fights. Like, Joanna versus Rose, Rose is a bad matchup for Joanna. But Andrade versus Rose, I think Andrade is a terrible matchup for Rose.
Yeah.
And that's just the way this game works. So Andrade could beat Rose, and then Joanna could beat Andrade again. Like, these are the things that happen in these divisions. And that's kind of what makes Demetrius Johnson so impressive, is that he hasn't found a guy that's been a bad matchup for him since Dominic Cruz back when he was fighting at bantamweight. There just hasn't been one. And that's just what makes his dominance so impressive. And you can say the same about John Jones. I mean, John Jones...
And George St. Pierre and Anderson.
Yeah.
And not to take it back, because I actually don't disagree with what you said about DJ initially. I don't heavily disagree. But I do think, greatness in this sport traditionally has been established by dominating your division over a long period of time, mm-hmm. not by going up and winning two titles.
Yeah, who's done it, really? I mean,
there's four of them.
It's kind of a new concept
yeah.
of people moving up and winning belts in other divisions.
Conor's the only one that's done it legitimately anyway, let's face it.
Well, I mean...
Maybe that's like a massive can of worms.
It's hard to...
There are worms everywhere.
Listen, I think that Cormier is the rightful double champion based on the circumstances.
So do I.
No, hold on. But he hasn't beaten Jon Jones. Jon Jones would be the champion if he was eligible, but he's not eligible. So it's hard to discount his accomplishments. He's the best light heavyweight in the world right now that is eligible to fight in the UFC.
Jon Jones didn't beat him the second time. He was disqualified. That was not a victory.
Oh,
he did not win the bout. No, I'm sorry. By the rules of the sport, Ben Johnson would be the 1980... Or did we say Ben Johnson won the 1988 100 meters in Seoul? No. He cheated. He got his medal taken away. He didn't win it. We don't consider him the gold medalist from that race. Jon Jones did not win that championship.
Jon Jones currently is not the champion. He's currently
he did not win
active.
The championship.
And right now, Cormier is the rightful champion at light heavyweight. He just is. There's no way to discount it. If you say Jon Jones is eligible, then sure.
Why?
The day that Jon Jones is eligible to fight that light heavyweight again, he's the best light heavyweight.
Daniel
in the world.
Cormier should have been stripped of the title the second he put his hand on that title.
Oh my God!
He would have had an hour left. He would have had an hour to weigh in again.
That's as bad as
finished.
Doing
he was
that.
Finished. He was dumb. Well, I'm kidding. I love DC. I think he's great.
The thing is, though, you're not wrong. I mean, he had one more chance to weigh in for an hour.
One more chance.
He came right back,
but
did it, did the towel thing.
Exactly.
You could have disqualified him.
But whatever. I actually think, I'm just going to say this, I was being facetious. Daniel Cormier, everything's done. I do very much respect it. I do think he's a legitimate double weight champion. I was just being facetious.
Fair enough. You're just clarifying. Yeah.
But Conor was too, you know? And Conor didn't want to forfeit that featherweight title. He could have been a double champ for a while.
Yeah.
But then, of course, Floyd Mayweather came along and ruined the party.
Yeah,
so wait, why? And I asked Dana this at the last press conference, is why was Conor stripped, but DC still got his belts?
A, because there was a featherweight title fight that they needed to do. I mean, that's the, I guess, cynical answer, but they needed to do it. B, because we knew he wasn't fighting for a long time. Like, it was completely declared, and
have you stripped to both titles, technically, since that happened?
He hasn't fought for either.
Yeah.
So.
It's disgusting.
If there was an obvious light heavyweight fight to make right now for the belt, I think that there would be discussions about whether, but there's not.
There isn't. I mean, Gustafsson would be the guy, but Gustafsson hasn't fought in a long time.
Exactly.
Over a year.
April 2017, when he defeated Glover Teixeira.
Yeah. And, I mean, we've seen what Glover's done since then. I mean, the win over Misha Sorokinov is a good win. I don't want to discount Glover, but you're right. There's just there's not a guy right now that's been running through the division.
It's just the precedent, man. It doesn't, when you look at it on paper, Conor got stripped literally near, I think, 4 weeks.
Precedent means nothing in the sport. We know that
says it all.
Fair enough. I mean, that's a valid point to make.
And Cormier has been the champ for longer than McGregor was. Currently.
Which is crazy.
Yeah, literally. Okay. Well, anyhow, on that note, we'll wrap this up. Any other fights on UFC 227 that catch your eye? One that catches my eye is Ricardo Ramos versus Chung Ho Kahn. I like this fight a lot. I know it's kind of out of nowhere, but do you guys have a dark horse fight that you're interested in watching?
I've got one.
There we go. Brett Jones versus Pedro Munoz. I think it's a great fight, 135 pounds. I think it's a really solid.
You guys gave me such a look when I said Kyung Ho Kong.
I was thinking that you weren't going to ask me your opinion on it because I was like, I have not looked at that fight.
Kyung Ho Kong is one of my favorite guys to watch in the UFC. Go back and watch tape of this guy, I'm telling you.
The look I gave you was pure terror of me being like,
please don't ask me to break this fight down. Well, do you remember who Ricardo Ramos is?
Of course, I remember.
Against Ayman Zahabi, that crazy knockout.
That
he's undefeated. Kyung Ho Kong has one of the worst records of any active UFC fighter. It's something like 15-12, but he's just so unbelievable to watch. The guy's so creative in the cage. He does a lot of fun stuff. And I also like the Cub Swanson versus Moicano fight is interesting to me. And Cub Swanson's like a 4-1 underdog in that fight, which shocks me because Cub Swanson's still a hell of a fighter.
I can't understand that, actually.
Yeah.
But I also like the Pedro Munoz fight. So much of my coverage is just going to be focused on the top two fights because I'm a newspaper guy, so I have limited space.
I don't think you're alone in that.
Yeah, I'll be honest that I haven't dug into the prelims particularly hard, and I shouldn't have even really said that. So let's just see you guys take over.
Well, I mean, a lot of my coverage is going to be focused on the return of the Mac on Friday, so.
Yeah, there is that.
Adds a lot to this fight week for sure and gives us some angles to work with.
If he doesn't walk out to Mark Morrison, return of the Mac when he comes off the state, I'm done. This is literally.
I don't think they get intro music for the press conference.
Oh, are we, Now, come on.
Like, he could have requested it.
Have they formally announced that he's back?
No.
But they have to do it before. They want everyone watching, so they have to make sure everyone knows, right?
They will say something. They're going to have to. I don't think that's one of the ones where you want to surprise people, because then people are like, oh, that happened and I missed it?
Yeah,
when's
exactly.
this coming out? This.
Well, it's going to be out probably tomorrow.
Okay, so, I mean, whatever.
For those wondering when we're recording this, it's currently Wednesday afternoon in the West Coast, so.
So, I mean, I was in Brooklyn. I shot some pretty good video in Brooklyn. Let's just say a certain promotion has asked to use some of that footage. I'm guessing for a certain promotion.
I'm looking forward to see the Brave FC promo that they put together. In Morocco. Well, thanks everybody for tuning in. This has been the TSN MMA show, and we'll be back next week. No cards for a while after this one. You got 2 weekends in a row off, the rare 2 weekends off in the UFC. And then a wonderful card in Lincoln, Nebraska with Justin Gaethje versus James Vick, which this card really probably could have used, but...
Yeah,
you know, it is what it is. So I like this card in terms of the top two fights. I think they're both going to be very intriguing, and we look forward to seeing how they play out. Thanks for joining us. We'll be back next week, and we appreciate you listening.